cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
The less your business spends, the more margin you keep. But today, everything costs more. So smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one proven platform, helping you reduce IT costs, maintenance costs, and manual errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move to NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/earnings. netsuite.com/earnings.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Tim Stenovec on Bloomberg Radio.
The whole universe was in a hot, dense state that nearly 14 billion years ago expansion started. Wait, the earth began to cool, the autotrophs began to drool, Neanderthals developed tools, we built a wall.
We built the pyramids.
Math, science, history, unraveling the mystery that all started with a big bang.
All right, everybody, you know it well. It aired for 12 seasons, September of 07 to May of 2019. We're talking to him about The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, well, he's the co-creator of the hit television comedy, The Big Bang Theory. It's about young scientists in Southern California, as if I needed to tell any of you
The world
that.
Knows.
And now he wants to help young scientists in Southern California, even more than he had earlier.
Yeah, he does. Through his family foundation, Chuck Lorre, the TV writer, director, producer, is pledging $24.5 million to the University of California, Los Angeles to help more low-income students study science and technology. This adds to a program he began back in 2015, and this donation will double the number of undergraduate scholarship recipients with financial needs to 80 each year. Tim, this is according to UCLA.
Well, Janet Lauren is Bloomberg News higher education finance reporter. She earlier this month wrote about Lorre's latest donation. She's with us here in the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio. Also joining us is Chuck Lorre, who not only co-created The Big Bang Theory, but also created or co-created and produced Grace Under Fire, Sybil, Dharma and Greg, Two and a Half Men, just to name a few. Chuck joins us from Los Angeles. Chuck, I do want to start with you because you've done a lot of philanthropy. You've supported STEM education in public schools before this latest donation. Give us your thinking behind the importance of STEM, especially when it comes to a world where, you know, we're talking about AI potentially doing a lot of the work for us.
Well, when this all began, AI was not part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. So I can't really speak to how that changes things. But my thinking early on was very simple. We had come to understand from various news reports that children here and in England, because they were watching The Big Bang Theory, were showing a spike of interest in STEM-related fields at high school and college levels. And that was remarkable because that certainly wasn't the original goal for The Big Bang Theory, to change the trajectory of a young person's life. But it was happening.
So I have to admit, as Chuck and I talked before, my family and I are huge fans of Young Sheldon.
Me too.
I had not watched The Big Bang Theory. We actually was introduced to the characters from Young Sheldon. So I have only maybe watched one episode of The Big Bang Theory. So all this is new to me. But I do know a lot about college financing. And one thing Chuck had said to me when we spoke earlier about the lack of finances is something he understood extremely well, because he did not finish college and carried around student loans of $2,000 for 15 years. So he understands.
Well, after 15 years, that $2,000 was about $8,000 or $9,000.
Wow.
Yes, that's the principle of accrued interest. But that's a good detail that a lot of people out there thinking about college, they don't think about. And what I found remarkable about this program is not only does it fund college, but it gives mentorship, which is something that is hard to get through college without. Could you talk a little bit about why that it was important, and why is it important for you to see, you know, kids college, graduate college in a reasonable amount of time, such as 4 years, and how difficult that can be?
Well, one of the original goals that I had, for better or worse, was to keep things local so that I could participate. And local for us here in Los Angeles was UCLA. And that was absolutely aided by the fact that our science consultant on the Big Bang Theory, Dr. David Salzberg, was a professor of physics at UCLA. And so we already had entree to the university through David. And wanting to participate and give back, it made sense to do so by focusing on young people who were pursuing or wanted to pursue a STEM field at UCLA. And also, because it was local, because it was UCLA, because of David, the mentorship process was also part of this. We weren't just handing out money and saying good luck. For a lot of the kids, they were the first generation in their families to get a college education. And so they're being thrown onto a speeding train, you know, right out of the gate. Mentorship's important.
Now, the information about the scholarship says there's opportunities for graduate school funding. We all know how expensive medical school can be. Can you talk about, was that important to you to continue students on this trajectory?
Not initially. This thing grew over a period of almost 10 years now. And when we realized that the success rate we were having with the kids going through undergraduate programs was phenomenal. And that's when we decided to expand the program into graduate school. And again, we were initially trying to keep the graduate school in the California system so that we could, again, stay close to it and participate.
Well, and I am curious too, Chuck, you know, you guys really worked hard to get the science right on the show, right? I mean, that was obviously a priority. David did. Well, talk to us about being in that environment for you, and maybe how that also shaped your thinking about where you wanted to commit money towards to help others, you know, pursue potentially, you know, degrees in the STEM world.
It begins with the show. The show is about a group of somewhat alienated, disenfranchised geniuses, and you know, struggling to make their way in the world, but clinging to one another as a community, basically almost a family unit in the way they treated one another, both good and bad. And so it made sense from the beginning that we focus on STEM, and for a couple of very practical reasons. One is the likelihood that you graduate in one of these fields, you can get employed. Same can't be said with a BA in the humanities or communication. I think I lost you guys. Did I lose you?
No.
We're just all
listening.
Thinking about our liberal arts degrees, Chuck.
Exactly.
Yeah, sorry. I'm sorry to disappoint you. Very practically, I wanted the program to also, you know, help young people who are going through, you know, the journey of education to end with employability. That may have been a little bit excited, but it seemed like wouldn't it be great to graduate without debt and have a job for you?
Yeah, right.
Yes,
right. What did you study?
Drugs.
No. I'm not sure I have a follow-up. No, what did you really academically study?
I may have had it's a dim memory. That's talking about a long time ago. There was also rock and roll and girls. But there was, I think I might have been a political science major. I don't know if I ever mentioned it to anybody, but yeah.
No.
Also, a degree that also, as they used to say, that degree and a token could get you a ride on the subway.
When cyber criminals strike, the difference between a catastrophic event and resilience is preparedness. Finance leaders who plan ahead can thwart the damage posed by ransomware. Yet in a recent EY poll, only 23% of directors expressed confidence in their organization's ability to respond to a ransomware attack. Cyber preparedness is just one facet of the complex risk landscape finance leaders face every day. Now more than ever, it's vital to keep ahead of developments. Cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
We want to get back to our guests. With us is Chuck Lorre, TV writer, director, and producer, The Big Bang Theory, Young Sheldon, Two and a Half Men, so much
you
more.
You can't list them all, or else we'll have no time for the interview.
I know. He's out there in LA, and in our studio is Janet Lauren, Bloomberg News higher education finance reporter. Chuck, a couple of things we want to get to, but I do want to ask you about, it really stung me what you said, and Janet put in her story where she wrote about your donation to UCLA, that you carried a student loan of about $2,000 for 15 years, and you said it grew to $8,000. The cost of education and this idea of, you know, kids coming out of school and not having any debt, that's increasingly becoming a thing of the way past. I don't know. Any thoughts about it as you try to help others who are pursuing education in STEM fields and just thinking about kind of a younger generation, how we do it better? Because it just feels like it's getting out of control and not getting better.
I don't have an answer to that. I just know that when State of New York caught up with me, they did catch up with me. I was very young and naive, and I don't think I understood my Social Security number was a target. Mm. But, you know, I spent probably 8 or 9 years sending the State of New York $50 a month, and that's how I got out from under it. I don't have a solution for this situation other than what we're doing, which is, seeking out kids that are not only exceptionally talented in their scholastic efforts, but high financial need backgrounds, underrepresented kids, and where the money can be put to good use in allowing them to get that STEM education and walk out of UCLA with no debt is... That seems like a goal worth pursuing.
Major gift, yeah, absolutely.
Hey, Chuck, I want to take a step back and just ask you about your broader philanthropy, because this is just one part of it, the Big Bang Theory, UCLA Scholars. You've got the Venice Family Clinic, Chuck Lorre, Rose Avenue Health and Wellness Center. You're working on some stuff when it comes to food banks and other healthcare-related causes, a trust for public land as well, and the greening of schoolyards. Just give us your philosophy when it comes to this type of work, this type of philanthropy. Like, where do you see the biggest needs?
Well, it began very personally for me. I was very ill when I was a young man, desperately ill. I did not know about free clinics. I did not know where to go. I certainly had no insurance, medical insurance, and it was a very frightening several years. And I was very fortunate that I managed to recover, but that stays with you. Mm-hmm. If you can't afford to see a doctor and you need a doctor, that's a fear that I don't wish on anyone. And so the philanthropy efforts began back in the 90s for me with the Venice Family Clinic, which I wish I'd actually known about when I was in my early 20s, but the idea that you could see a doctor without having any money in your pocket, I thought was something I wanted to participate in. So I've been involved with the Venice Family Clinic for I don't know, 25, 26 years. And that's expanded to other healthcare opportunities. And so that began, and then the STEM efforts, as I said before, began really by accident when we found out that inexplicably, the Big Bang Theory was encouraging young people to pursue STEM research, STEM fields. So the thought was really quite simple. Maybe we can help.
Yeah.
I mean, the original goal in making that show was to make people laugh. It was not to change the trajectory of a young man or young woman's life. But it was doing that. So as long as it was doing that, let's participate. And that's how the scholarship started.
Well, young Sheldon has really made us laugh.
I absolutely love that you're watching Young Sheldon and you haven't watched The Big Bang Theory.
It's amazing. It's like fantastic. It's like a gate, but it could be a gateway, Janet, into the original show that it spun off from.
But he's a great character, and so is Dr. Sturgis. I love Dr. Sturgis.
Wally Shawn. Yeah, we've been so blessed with some of the casting, Ed Begley and Wally Shawn. It's been a terrific experience.
And the university president, that depiction seems entirely realistic to me. Well, how did you decide to pivot into young Sheldon? And you know, he finished college in what, 3 years, and the idea of going to East Texas Tech, and how did that all come about? Because it is a sort of a realistic path for a young genius like that.
Well, the backstory of Sheldon on The Big Bang Theory was that he graduated college at 14 or 13 or 14, I forget exactly, and then went to Caltech to do postgraduate work. We had already laid in, you know, the backstory for Sheldon's journey, graduating high school at the age of 11, in an East Texas town where they simply did not have the wherewithal to deal with a genius of that size. And East Texas Tech, we invented in order to keep him, you know, to keep him low so we can do the show, and for have him ripping through that university as well on his way to Caltech, and ultimately, as we did, if you've watched The Big Bang Theory, he does win a Nobel Prize in the final episode of the series.
We definitely get it. We're going to work, Chuck, on Janet, because she's got it. If she likes young Sheldon, she's going to love The Big Bang Theory. She's got it. They go together.
It's a wholly different thing.
It is different.
And to see the absolute genius of that cast, mm-hmm. Led by Jim Parsons playing Sheldon at a later age. We had 12 years of absolute fun making that show.
Just got a minute left. Do you have a favorite moment in time, considering all that you've worked on and created or co-created or what have you? Just got about 45 seconds left here.
Wow, that's a macro question.
I know, sorry. I'm a macro kind of gal.
It's kind of hard to pull a favorite moment. There certainly have been moments that have stuck with me. One of the, specifically trying to answer that question. What I've loved about The Big Bang Theory, and I guess, you know, we're talking mostly about young Sheldon, is, and I think why it was attractive to young people was if you felt disenfranchised, if you felt you're on the outside looking in, which a lot of people do, and you don't have to be a Mensa participant or a genius to feel that way. The show represented community. It represented like-minded souls helping one another. So maybe that's what was attractive to kids watching.
I think that's a great way to finish up. Listen, thank you, and it's a great thought. Thank you so much. So appreciate it. Be well. Chuck Lorre, TV writer, director, producer, co-creator of The Big Bang Theory, and of course our Janet Lorne here. This is Bloomberg.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.